Welcome to the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine. Meet 'em, greet 'em, treat 'em, and street 'em. Today's date is September 20th, 2013, and I am your skeptical host, Ken Milne. The topic for today's episode, number 45, is vitamin H, or haloperidol. Yes, the SGEM is back up and rolling, and this is the third episode for season number two. Some of the feedback from last year was to give you listeners some more emergency psych cases. So for all of you out there who asked for more psych, here it is. We have a guest skeptic, a member of the Beam Dream team. You may recognize him from previous podcasts, Dr. Tony Sapal. Tony, welcome back to the SGEM.
Ken, thanks a lot. And to all the SGEM audience members out there, hello.
Oh, we love that voice of yours. Now, Tony, you've had some big news since we've podcasted last time. Could you update us on what's been going on in your professional life?
Well, thanks, Ken. I am proud to say that I have joined the faculty at the University of Arkansas for Medical Sciences as their chairman. And I just want to put a plug in for all my UAMS folks out there. This is a phenomenal place to train and learn emergency medicine. Very happy to be here.
Go Razorbacks.
Damn straight.
Well, why don't we jump into the case scenario then? And that's a 23-year-old man who presents to the emergency department with the police, and he's a known schizophrenic. And the police picked him up for a violent outburst at a coffee shop. He's clearly agitated, and you need to chemically restrain him.
So, Ken, the question today is haloperidol the safest and most effective method of tranquilization for patients with psychosis-induced aggression or agitation?
Great. Thanks for the question. Now, you brought your own special guest. You wanted your chief resident to be participating today. And so say hello to Dash, and he is going to give us the serious complications or serious reactions that you could have from the use of haloperidol. Dash?
All right, Dr. Milne, and thanks so much for having me. So I'm Michael Del Castillo-Hagee, third-year resident, chief resident here at UAMS, the Department of Emergency Medicine. And we are going to be going over the serious reactions for haloperidol. What we're looking at are neurologic side effects, extrapyramidal, tardive dyskinesia, akathisia, dystonia, and seizure, hyperpyrexia or heat stroke, neuroleptic malignant syndrome, pneumonia, hypotension or hypertension, cardiac. There's also risk of sudden death, hyponatremia, hepatic impairment, hematologic, leukopenia, neutropenia, and agranulocytosis, and then ocular, cataracts and retinopathy.
Thank you very much, Dash, for giving us that list. Now, Tony, you're the one who picked the paper, so do you think you can give us the reference for today's podcast?
Absolutely, Ken. So this is a Cochrane review by Pauney et al. As you know, with most of these Cochrane reviews, there are a number of authors usually. The title of the paper is Haloperidol for Psychosis-Induced Aggression or Agitation, and in parentheses, Rapid Tranquilization. This was published in 2012.
Thank you again, Tony, for picking such a long paper, 300-plus pages. I think this is why the SGEM listeners like this podcast. We can take those 300-plus papers and distill it down into a bottom line, a take-home message.
We just want to give them what they want, Ken.
Well, we always like to give them what they want. So for the PICO, the Population Intervention Comparator and Outcome, we have randomized control trials involving adults with agitation or aggression thought to be due to psychosis. The intervention, of course, was haloperidol. The comparison was nothing, a placebo, or 18 other treatments. And the outcomes were sleep, need for repeat injections, or side effects from the medication. So we'll jump forward to the methods, Tony. And as you alluded to, this is a Cochrane systematic review. And they tend to be very, very well done. In fact, the authors went through all these electronic databases, hand-searched, and even went through conference proceedings. But they didn't stop there. These Cochrane guys, they're pretty intense. They went and took all the randomized control trials that were included and contacted the authors to see if they had any additional information. Pretty impressive, don't you think?
Yeah, I agree. And Ken, here's a little known fact. Did you know that to be a Cochrane author, you have to have too much time on your hands?
I guess that's why I'm not a Cochrane reviewer.
Yeah, same here, buddy.
So did you want to make any comments about the methodological issues in this systematic review?
Absolutely. So, and I'm sure by now the SGEM audience is fairly savvy with systematic reviews and, you know, what makes a good review and what makes not such a good review. Of course, the Cochrane guys, as you've already mentioned, are fairly rigorous. And the work that went into this was incredible. First of all, to tackle 18 other treatments in addition to placebo or no treatment gives you an idea of exactly how much work went into this. And as you read through this 300-plus page document, you find that they went through this with a fine-tooth comb. They had a superb search strategy and then did all of the right things to make sure they captured all of the relevant, high-quality evidence to answer our PICO question.
So moving on to the results, there were 669 potential studies that were identified in the search, but 32 studies were finally included for the analysis. And they captured patients in range from 18 to 73 years of age, and over 80% of the patients had a diagnosis of schizophrenia, with only a minority having drug-induced psychosis or an organic mental disorder. So, Tony, could you summarize the main results?
Absolutely. And what's interesting about the results that are pertinent to us as emergency physicians is when they looked at Haldol versus placebo, out of these 32 trials, of the trials that were relevant to us that were high quality, the total N was 270 patients. This, however, was found to be, they found a statistically significant difference between Haldol and placebo, reporting a relative risk of 0.88. And I should also comment that the confidence intervals around that result were fairly tight, so that the result has a high level of precision. When they looked at lorazepam versus Haldol, they found that there was a statistically significant difference in favor of Haldol with a relative risk that approached 2 with, again, reasonable confidence intervals for people being asleep at 3 hours. Those receiving Haldol versus placebo, they achieved sleep at 2 hours.
Isn't it pretty impressive that the Haldol versus placebo was only significant at 2 hours?
It is surprising, and I'll say that the relative risk of 0.88 is surprisingly not as significant as I thought it would be. You would expect that there'd be a huge difference between Haldol and placebo, and while this represents a real difference, not as large as I would have expected it to be.
Yeah, I was expecting a bigger difference there too, Tony.
The authors of this Cochrane systematic review made the following conclusion, quote, "If no other alternative exists, sole use of intramuscular haloperidol could be life-saving. Where additional drugs to offset the adverse effects are available, sole use of haloperidol for the extreme emergencies in situations of coercion could be considered unethical. Addition of the sedating promethazine has support from better-grade evidence from within randomized trials. Use of an alternative antipsychotic drug is only partially supported by fragmented and poor-grade evidence. Evidence for use of newer generation antipsychotic alternatives is no stronger than that for older drugs. Adding a benzodiazepine to haloperidol does not have strong evidence of benefit and carries a risk of additional harm." End of quote.
So, Tony, let's go through some BEAM comments, some analysis of this systematic review, if we can.
Yeah, so, Ken, this is a really important paper because we commonly see these patients in the emergency department, and not only is it important to sedate these folks for their own safety, but for our own safety and the safety of those that work in the emergency department. We definitely want to stay away from physical restraints because that in and of itself can be quite harmful to everyone involved. And we want to avoid over-sedating the patient, because while we can use rescue airways and intubate these folks, we should be able to sedate them appropriately without that outcome. What is interesting about this paper is that many of us use the B52 protocol or the 5-2 protocol or 10-2 protocol, where we will routinely give haloperidol with a benzodiazepine, usually lorazepam. The results of what the data tells us in using these drugs is that the addition or that common practice may actually be harmful. And what I found most interesting is if we're not using a drug to counteract the adverse effects, their terminology is that this could be unethical. Now, I think that is a bit of a strong statement. Don't know if I agree with that 100%, but I found that quite interesting.
I found that strong. I found that statement rather strong as well about the ethics involved. And, you know, some of the weaknesses in this trial is that most of the trials that they reported with combination therapies hadn't been done in the emergency department themselves and were methodologically flawed.
Yeah, that's correct, Ken. And as is true with a lot of these trials, these are very difficult studies to perform. And it doesn't surprise me that the data is not overwhelming. And in addition, I'd say that we now have some newer agents available, these new antipsychotics. And folks are using these, including our psychiatric colleagues, but there's very little evidence to support their use. And they're pretty expensive, especially compared to haloperidol, which is pennies on the dollar compared to these newer agents.
And reflecting back on that unethical statement, the recommendations from ASAP say that the use of a benzodiazepine or conventional antipsychotics as monotherapy for undifferentiated agitated patients is their recommendation.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that the careful reading of the ASAP policy is that it's benzodiazepine or antipsychotic and not the combination. So there's no and in there, which if you read the systematic review would tend to support that statement, although they would definitely lean towards using the antipsychotic more than just a benzodiazepine alone. If you talk to our toxicology colleagues, they obviously much rather prefer benzodiazepines. They feel they are safer, and perhaps in their selection of patients, that may be true.
Thank you for drilling down on that, because it is an or statement in that ASAP recommendation. It's benzodiazepines or conventional antipsychotics. So I'm glad you read that very carefully.
Thanks, Ken. I'm a careful kind of guy.
So do you have any final statements about this paper before we go to the bottom line?
No, I think that the SGEM audience was quite keen on deciding they needed more psychiatric analysis. I mean, not that they're crazy or anything, but it's very difficult to find high quality evidence in this arena for emergency medicine care.
All right, I agree. So the BEAM bottom line, haloperidol works and should be used with medications to avert the side effects, if possible. Agreed?
Absolutely agree. How about you, Dash?
Absolutely.
So do you want to give a case conclusion to our scenario that we presented with this agitated 23-year-old who didn't get the coffee he wanted?
Well, listen, man, if I don't get my coffee right, I might need some sedation also. So the way this case ended up is we sedate this 23-year-old known schizophrenic with 5 milligrams of haloperidol IM. He is settled and sleeping in 2 hours. Screening blood work is sent off, and he waits for the psychiatry service to assess, which, at least in the U.S., can take up to 10 to 15 hours sometimes.
Wow, that's unfortunate. Now, just as an aside, do you preload these patients with anything to prevent the tardive dyskinesia?
You know, Ken, unfortunately, the standard practice is not to do that. Oftentimes, we're rushing to get the patient sedated, and we grab the haloperidol. Rarely, if ever, have I seen anyone add Benadryl to that at the same time as a co-administered agent, or even later, which you would think would be fine as well after the patient is sedated. It's certainly something I'm going to think about every time I sedate a patient from here on out and see how that affects patients from a side effect standpoint, and quite frankly, to also be careful about over-sedating these individuals because most of the agents we would use have sedating properties.
Since we're talking about cautions there, let's just make sure everybody knows that there is a black box warning on the use of haloperidol, but it's for dementia-related psychosis. And I'll include that black box warning for dementia-related psychosis in the blog posting.
That sounds reasonable.
We have a Keener contest, and Dash helped us with the Keener contest because he glossed over one of the serious side effects of haloperidol. And one of the serious side effects of haloperidol is its effect on the cardiac system. And so if you're a Keener, you email me first at thesgem@gmail.com with what are the possible serious cardiac reactions due to haloperidol, and I will send you a cool skeptical prize.
Last week's winner for the Keener contest was Paul Haskin from Edmonton, Canada. Paul gave the criteria for SIRS, systemic inflammatory response syndrome. He knew that you needed two or more to meet the definition of SIRS. Temperature less than 36 degrees Celsius or greater than 38 degrees Celsius. And for our American listeners out there, that's 96.8 Fahrenheit or 100.4 Fahrenheit. Tachycardia of a heart rate greater than 90. Tachypnea with a respiratory rate of greater than 20. Or an arterial partial pressure of carbon dioxide of less than 4.3 kilopascals, 32 millimeters of mercury. And the fourth criteria for the definition of SIRS was abnormal white blood cells, leukocytes less than 4,000 or greater than 12,000, or the presence of greater than 10% bands. So congratulations, Paul. I will be sending you a cool skeptical prize.
Well, Tony, it's great to have you back on the SGEM. And I am going to ask you to give the tagline.
The tagline is, remember to be skeptical of anything you learn, even if you heard it on the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine.
Thank you so much, Tony, and we'll talk to everybody next week.
Great. Thanks, Ken.